Fort Lauderdale, Florida, February 1980. The decomposing body of a man named Big Nat McCullough is found in his home with the back of his head blown off. Mafia Music is not just the title of an album by correctional officer turned rapper Rick Ross. The Mafia has infiltrated the music industry from day one. In fact, it helped build up the music industry into what it is, from rock and roll to rap, but especially in R&B music back in the 60s, 70s, and 80s. And a guy named Morris Levy, who was Nat McCall's one-time mentor and boss, was perhaps the music industry's biggest gangster of his era. Nat McCall was Levy's business partner, bodyguard, and protege. And Big Nat would have never been knocked off without the go-ahead of Morris Levy and his Genovese mafia backers in New York. Big Nat McCullough was Levy's right-hand man and vice president of Roulette Records, as well as the owner of a tiny R&B music label backed by Levy named Cala Records. Morris Levy is infamous for stealing the publishing rights of quite a few artists, but he first came on to notoriety and importance in the music scene when he opened the Birdland Jazz Club in New York, which was, you know, it's legendary. I think there's a museum about it now. It was named after Charlie Bird Parker, and Count Basie played there, a Morris Levy signee. Also, he had Frankie Lyman back in the 50s, Why Do Fools Fall in Love? And Levy and his Roulette Records biggest cash cow was a fresh-faced white kid from Pittsburgh named Tommy James. Tommy James had the number one hits Money, Money, and I Think We're Alone Now. And when he showed up as a teenager in New York, when his first record started getting a lot of play in Pittsburgh, where he's from, all the major record labels had an offer on the table for him. And then the very next morning, all those offers had gone away because Morris Levy had called around and made all the big labels an offer they couldn't refuse. He wanted Tommy James for his smaller independent label, and he got him. Over the course of Tommy James' time with Morris Levy, which stretched from about, I don't know, 68 to 76, he stole about 30 to 40 million in Tommy James' publishing royalties. And think about this, infamous gangster, black heroin kingpin, Frank Matthews, Mr. Big, the one who got away with it. Well, $30 million that Tommy James had stolen from him back then is worth about $100 million now. Well, that's about the same amount that, or maybe more than Frank Matthews stacked and fled with. And he was the biggest drug dealer in the country for a couple of years. So that's how profitable a corrupt, mafia-backed record label was back then, and perhaps is now. Morris Levy's Roulette Records and their golden goose, Tommy James, were so important to the Genovese crime family and so known about to the other crime families that in 1971, when Joey Gallo tried to break away from the Profaci family, which became, we call, the Colombo family, and the Genovese backed Joey Gallo. There was a shooting war that broke out, and they relocated Tommy James down to Nashville, out of New York, for fear he'd be targeted by the Colombo Profaci family to take out a big source of cash for the Genovese. So when Nat McCall was found dead in 1980, he'd been hiding out for about 2 years because of some stuff that happened back in 1977. He was fleeing the heat from three murders he was suspected of committing in the Washington, D.C. area, including that of celebrity DJ Bob Nighthawk Terry. According to Maryland State Police records, McCullough, less than a month shy of his 50th birthday, was a prime suspect in the three prior homicides. That same document claimed Levy is the one who relayed the orders from the Genovese to whoever did it, or maybe he did it himself, to knock Nat off down in Florida because he knew too much. And that's what they do when you've run your course of usefulness to the real mob and you're not one of them, or sometimes even if you are one of them, boom, they tie up your loose ends. Now, Levy's corrupt tentacles in the DJ radio world stretch all the way back to him managing a guy named Alan Freed. You might not know the name Alan Freed, but you know the word payola probably. And Alan Freed was the first DJ to have the felony payola law applied to him, or I think it was made up for him, the practice that Levy probably was the guy who started, or one of them, of paying DJs to play records so you could make a record be popular nationally, which violated FCC rules. And remember, we as the American public own the airwaves, and radio stations and TV stations are granted certain immunities from antitrust laws, so they can't just do what they want to do. And paying a DJ to play a record outside of the rules of the programming director is a felony, and that Morris Levy's guy, Alan Freed, was the first one to get hit with that. So it's 1977, and Levy and Nat McCullough want to do a concert, and they're calling it the Black Woodstock. It's going to be on Independence Day in the eastern shores of Maryland. Have all the big black acts, soul acts, etc. It's going to be outdoors. Well, Nighthawk Terry gets with two black gangsters from the East Coast, guys named Howard McNair and Teddy Brown. Now, backtrack a little bit, just so you have a clear understanding of Morris Levy. This is a guy who bragged about killing the man who killed his brother back in 1958 and getting away with it, personally killing him. And just in 1975, Levy and McCullough were out on the town one night with some women, and a guy made what Levy thought was an inappropriate comment to the girl he was with, and they attacked the guy. McCullough held him down. Levy pummeled him in the face. The guy lost his eye. He was an off-duty NYPD cop. So,
Brian?
Thank you, Pat, and good morning. At least five federal grand juries are investigating allegations of mafia involvement in the music business. And Tuesday, a grand jury in Newark, New Jersey, returned a 117-count indictment against 21 people, including Morris Levy, a powerful figure in the music business who owns record companies and record stores. Mr. Levy joins us this morning from Boston, where just 24 hours ago, he was arrested by the FBI. Good morning, Mr. Levy.
Good morning, Mr. Ross.
Mr. Levy, federal authorities were describing you yesterday as the godfather of the American music business, the connection between the mob and the music business. What do you say to that?
There is no connection between the mob and the music business.
At all?
I don't believe so.
You were indicted yesterday on three of the 117 counts. The indictment says essentially that you and a New Jersey mafia figure, Corky Vastola, arranged to have somebody beat up because they owed more than $1 million to the big record company MCA. What about these charges?
They're not true. They wouldn't have been filed yesterday if I had joined the witness protection program.
Levy was a rough and tumble guy. He had grown up in Harlem, and he probably, you know, had put in some work, as they say. So, back to the concert. I want to do this concert on the eastern shores of Maryland. Nighthawk Terry is the biggest black radio personality in the region at the time, so he's kind of in charge of marketing. He's going to flood the airwaves. But the airwaves isn't all he flooded. Him and Brown and McNair printed up a bunch of counterfeit tickets and started selling them. And it depressed sales of the concert tickets. And even though like 150,000 people came, Levy and the Genovese felt that they had lost over $1 million in potential profits. And 2 days after the concert, Brown and McNair are found shot in the head near the concert campgrounds. And McCullough was probably the guy, because he was the liaison to the black community, who did that or had it done. And then in 1978, Nighthawk Terry himself drove away from the radio station one night in his blue Oldsmobile Toronado, never to be seen again. An informant told the FBI he had been killed, dismembered, and spread across North Carolina farmland. And in fact, his car was, his blue Oldsmobile was found torched in North Carolina about a year after he disappeared. So the Nighthawk and Brown and McNair had counterfeited like 100,000 tickets and cost Levy and the Genovese a lot of money. And they paid for it with their lives. And Nat McCullough was suspected to be the point man, if not the trigger man, on all three of those killings. And now we get, like so many Al Prophet stories from the 70s, now we get to the Heron. You may have heard of Kevin Gray, reputed to be the leader of Washington, D.C.'s most murderous hit squad during the decade when the nation's capital reigned as the murder capital of the world. Gray was indicted for 31 murders. Well, his uncle was a guy named Linwood Gray. And back in the late 70s, Linwood Gray was the other co-promoter, along with Levy, of the Eastern Shores Black Woodstock. And Linwood Gray was suspected of being the biggest heroin dealer in D.C. in the late 70s. He got indicted for that, and he actually beat those charges, but he got convicted of tax evasion And while he was in prison for tax evasion, his lawyer from the case where the drug case he beat, accused him of extorting him from prison, and he got 25 years for that. But then some of that got rolled back, and I'm not sure when Linwood Gray got out, or if he got out, or when he died, or if he died. Be interesting to know, because he was an interesting character. He made the papers in his early 20s for some bank robberies, and then he was found criminally insane, so they put him in a mental facility for 6 years, and street legend is that he used the money from the bank robberies to set himself up in the heroin business, which was pretty sophisticated for a crazy guy. They were getting it in Amsterdam, heroin, packaging it into Marlboro cigarette packs, smuggling it back into the U.S. and then onto the streets of D.C. But when the trial, when his narcotics trial came up in 79 or something, Linwood Gray did a Keefe D. He blamed it on a dead man. He in fact said that Nighthawk Terry, the DJ, who had been mixed up with the two, with McNair and Brown, who were known drug traffickers, he said Nighthawk was the real kingpin and that he was just along for the ride. And he was found not guilty of a lot of those narcotics charges by blaming it on Nighthawk Terry, who was gone and presumed dead at that point. Now, back to Nat McCullough and Morris Levy. Considered the number one suspect in the two homicides in the woods near the concert campgrounds and Nighthawk Terry's disappearance, Nat left New York and went into hiding in Florida. He was discovered dead in a rented Fort Lauderdale residence, sitting on a lounge chair in front of his TV, back door open, keys on the ledge, TV on, heater on, back of his head blown out. So whoever it was let themselves in, probably shot him in the back of the head, or was let in, shot him in the back of the head, left. He never knew it was coming. No one's ever been charged for the murders of Nighthawk and the other two guys associated with the concert, nor of Nat McCullough. Morris Levy never really suffered a legal penalty for the things he did. He did get convicted of a RICO charges involving his time in the music industry, and he got a 12-year sentence, but he died right before he went in. His old mafia boss, Vince the Chin Gigante, dodged the fate of a lot of the other mob bosses in the mid-80s with the Mafia Commission trial. He lasted and through the 90s. He was the one who would dress in the bathrobe and walk around Mulberry Street and pretend to be crazy. He ended up dying in prison in 05, but those guys took a lot of money out of the music industry, and Levy didn't suffer any penalty for it. Levy was a big force in the music industry for a while. He owned the Strawberry's Records chain in the Northeast. It had 81 stores. I remember servicing them with DVDs back 10 years ago before they went out of business. He had 900 employees. He had a tape production plant, a record pressing plant. He had a lot of big acts signed to him, generated a lot of money. And whatever you think about certain rap COs, what they've been accused of, what they've been convicted of, they may have done it on a bigger scale or not necessarily, but you know, everyone learns from those who come before them, and guys like Morris Levy and guys like him laid the blueprint that if anybody did anything like that later on, I'm sure they learned it from the old timers in the industry. Mafia music, American dope.